Okay, today is November 18th, 2013. My name is Emily Jacobson. I work with the New York Public Library, and today we are interviewing Carol St. Pierre, who works with the United States Army. Carol, do you want to tell me a little bit about where you're from?
I'm from New York City. My parents are Haitian. You can say I'm American Haitian because I was born here. And I joined the military when I graduated college, Hunter College, and went to Hunter College for 4 years and received my bachelor in nursing, and I then decided to join the military. I joined for one purpose only, was that we would always be at war, so I wanted preparation to be prepared. And so that's why I joined the military. What I found in the military was cohesiveness in regarding to black women in the military. Being a woman and being in the military, you have your ups and downs, especially being a woman in the military. And so it was an experience for me to have women that from all nationality to work with. There was five of us and that worked together, and that gave me the courage to be where I am today. And today I'm a colonel at the 8th Medical Brigade, and I'm the chief nurse. So I really feel that my achievement was because of these women that was with me. I was the youngest one. I'm still the youngest one. Out of the five of us, three of them have retired, and one will be retiring the end of August. So I'm the youngest one. So, like I indicated, because of these women, black women, they gave me the strength to move on. When it was really hard, I didn't feel it because I had them to support my support, and never felt the hardness, it being hard until now, to tell you the truth, being alone, and I realized how hard being in the military is really is for a woman. It's dominated by I call them the boys, men, who sees women as women and not really supposed to be in the military still. I'm sorry to say, we still have that mentality of some men thinking that we really shouldn't be there for to serve. We should be serving, probably cooking, whatever. I hate to say that, but it's the truth. So it's hard. It's really, really hard to put your foot down and be noticed and be recognized for what you are and who you are. So,
how long into your career before you met these five women who helped you
out? Beginning.
Right in the beginning.
Right in the beginning. I wanted to bring you pictures of us right in the beginning. Right in the beginning. Whereas they call me the sink social, because I'm the one that if you say let's have a party, I'm like, okay, I'll arrange the party. So I met these five women. It's like in the beginning of my career, and it's like we're officers, and so the enlisted will say, if you saw one, you saw them all. It's like we were flocks, those birds that you see going one way. You see one, sooner or later there's going to be some, there's going to be a bunch of them following. So in that sense, yeah, I was taken by these four strong women that were like hardcore, very, very strong. And I became as strong as they are. Sometimes too strong, because they were my mentors. They were my rock, you might say. They were my tree. That and I'm telling you, there was time in the military. I've met other women that have not reached my level, because they didn't have the support system like I did. Mm-hmm. They didn't have somebody that was there, and knowing that somebody was there and knowing that it was hard, but survival, you know, as one who survived, mm-hmm. they left the military. They didn't continue. They didn't contribute. And they might have had a lot to contribute, but because they didn't have the resources mm-hmm. available to them, it was hard.
So what were some of the challenges you faced?
The challenges I faced, and like I told you, the four women made me not see the challenges. I can tell you the challenges I face now. Mm-hmm. Being black and being a woman is not being taken seriously. Looked upon as if you're an idiot, mm-hmm. believe it or not, and that you can't contribute anything to the military, believe mm-hmm. it or not. That is still there, mm-hmm. you know, and the racism is still there too. Being black and being a woman, they see you, and they see that, you know, well, you're not one of us, mm-hmm. which is sad to say, because I feel in a war situation, the enemy will not know that I'm black or white. I'm the enemy to them.
Yeah.
So when they have to, use a weapon to kill me, they won't stop because I'm different,
mm-hmm.
because I'm not in their eyes. So you would think that, I hate to say, you would think that in our country, we would think the same way, but some do not. And I just have to say some, because it's not the whole men, it's just some of them, but the some are the ones that's in power. The some are the ones that have high job that could make a difference, but mm-hmm. do not make the difference. If you know what I'm saying.
So, what are some of the things that you've done to combat that?
Oh, okay. Well, the military has something they call family readiness. Mm-hmm. Family readiness was started. And I guess really, really back 2005, when the war started,
mm-hmm.
I got involved 2005. Family readiness. The mission is to take care of the family while the soldier mm-hmm. is out there at war. And they really felt that if you took care of the soldier's family, the soldier could achieve the mission, complete the mission. And they would not be worrying about who's taking care of the family, is a problem, somebody was out there. So I really got involved in working with the family. My unit got deployed, and I was left behind to really arrange a group of volunteers to taking care of the family. And there were multiple issues, you would not believe, mm-hmm. of families never really having their resources taken back to them, meaning that having their loved one taken away from them, and they didn't really know how to deal with it. I had a soldier, and really why I really, this is really something that I think I'll do for the rest of my life, and I would really ask other people to, volunteer, is that, I had a friend who's a soldier, and he went to away, Iraq, Afghanistan, I can't say which one, but went away. And when he went away, he was the sole provider, the person that took care of the family, mm-hmm. And when he went away, the wife didn't know how to deal with that. So the pressure was upon him so much that he wanted to harm himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wanted to harm himself, he almost succeeded. Because he wanted to harm himself, the military brought him back, of course, but they really didn't understand, okay, he wanted to harm himself not because of the situation with where he was at, it was because his family was putting so much pressure into him. And I realized then and then, if there was somebody like me or you or somebody taking care of the family, ensuring the family that, to give me the problem, don't give it to him, give it to me, he would have completed his tour.
Mm-hmm. So So in this program, what sort of help did you give the families?
Believe it or not, everything. You name it, financial. Mm-hmm. Most of the women, really the men, took care of the money part, and they didn't know how to do that. So we actually had to have organization to come in to help them, you know, have session. Yeah. Some of them never worked, mm-hmm. so you provided organization out there providing them the career-wise ability so that they could go out there and make a living and have them really concentrate on something else rather than the soldier at that particular time. Be more independent.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have organization that helps the children. You have children that, it's hard for them to know that their mother and father are not there. So you have resources. They're out there to take care of the kids. They have resources, whereas the military provide, like, camping.
Mm-hmm.
And they will pay for the camp for the child to go. And so when the child goes camping, they have other children that has the same issue. And so they could relate to that, and they could talk about it. They can't talk to their family, the mother or father, whoever's left mm-hmm. behind, they could talk to one another, mm-hmm. especially teenagers, yeah. And stuff like that.
Do you find that it's mostly, the families you work with are mostly women and children, or do you find any families that are men and the children?
Very rarely men, it's mm-hmm. usually women that, mm-hmm. you know, that's taking care. Most of the people that I took care of were women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not really that many men. It was really more women. The men that, you know, there were one or two. The men were like, they took care of everything. So it wasn't, there was no transition. The transition, you might say, is them taking care of the kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that would be a transition. Mm-hmm. But very, very rarely did I encounter that.
How many people in your unit worked with you on this project?
Oh, there was, believe it or not, there was like 15, 20.
Mm-hmm.
And really, initially, I started with five of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then it grew because the five of us couldn't really handle it. It was me, my vice president. We couldn't handle it. It was so, the problem and issue that would come to us was like so difficult, you mm-hmm. know, and you have to contact these individuals once a month, and they will have a problem, and you have to try to resolve it because yeah. you don't want the soldier to hear of it, and so right. and be concerned about it. And later on, I developed like a 15 to 20 group of male and female that we work together as mm-hmm. one to send care package to the soldiers, to do fundraising. The military has this system in place, which is family readiness program, but the families have to do their own fundraising, their own money. They don't provide a budget.
Right.
You provide your own budget. They give you a limit of how much you should obtain, but mm-hmm. more or less that's it.
So this program's still
exists. Ongoing. It great. Still exists. They're looking for volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Family members, you'd be so surprised, is there for the family. Mm-hmm. However, some family do not get involved because, like I indicated, the husband is usually the resource. So mm-hmm. they don't really know how to start a group.
Yeah.
And you have to have a strong individual to start the group to continue that.
Mm-hmm. So you do this work in addition to your nursing duties?
Yeah. I have two hats. You know, at this particular time, I'm the chief nurse at Fort Wadsworth, Staten Island. And I'm a nurse. I'm a pain management nurse at Roosevelt Hospital. Mm-hmm. So it's overwhelming. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm the president of the Black Military Women.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very important to me because mm-hmm. that organization really is something that I could identify with. when I came into the military, if I didn't have these support, I might not have been here talking to you about my story. So I feel that the Black Military Women, the national, is national. I'm the New York chapter. We need to be around so that we're open to members, soldiers to come and tell us their story.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Can you tell me a little bit more about your work on Staten Island?
Okay, I'm the chief nurse. Mm-hmm. And being the chief nurse, everything that happens, they come to you. If somebody gets sick, they come to you. If even somebody has issue problem with housing, you'd be so surprised, people, soldiers are still homeless. Mm-hmm. It would come to my ear, and then I know a lot of people. I do have a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. Because of the family readiness, it provided me with the knowledge of knowing who to contact. Right. So I'm able to do that. But that's more or less in being involved, being there for the soldiers, because they do have a lot of issues and problems. Some of them have had, been deployed twice, mm-hmm. you know, and it's an issue for them. It's still an issue for them. And so to know that I'm there supporting them is important to them.
And you indicated that you're part of the 8th Medical Brigade. Mm-hmm. Has that been for your whole career, or have you moved around?
I've moved around, but not that meant that much. I was in 307 General Hospital, mm-hmm. and then when they closed that unit, I went to the 344, and I stayed there for a while, mm-hmm. and they closed that unit in 2012, mm-hmm. and so it was lucky enough when we had 2012, in August we had a hurricane. I forgot it wasn't Sandy, it was Lorraine, it was one of the hurricanes, 2012, August. Mm-hmm. I got promoted as a colonel, mm-hmm. and my unit closed in the interim, and so I was able to get a position in the 8th Medical Brigade as the chief nurse. So mm-hmm. it worked out well, that transition to move on. And so I've had in my career 3 units, mm-hmm. and the 8th Medical Brigade is one of the units that I'm in at this particular time.
Mm-hmm. And were those all in New York City?
Mm-hmm. All of them were in New York City, yeah.
And what was that like, having your whole military career so close to home?
You know, it's close to home, but like I said, because I had this particular program, mm-hmm. and I was really the major person that made that happen, you do have soldiers that, you know, are deployed, but I feel that it's very, very important to have soldiers that stay behind to make sure that the soldiers that are deployed are able to do the job. And I wasn't fortunate enough to be deployed and I came close. But if I had, there wouldn't have been a family readiness for the people that I helped. And so you always have to have somebody left behind to help. To arrange to be there for others. Mm-hmm. So if you could say to me, well, do you feel that your career was beneficial? Yes, because there were so many soldiers, you would not believe, and still, that need help. Mm-hmm. And the Family Readiness Program helps the soldiers. It's mm-hmm. not really well advertised as much as it should be, mm-hmm. but it does exist.
If you had advice for soldiers who are returning home, what would it be?
To use your resources. Mm-hmm. We are out there. The military does provide it for them. The military has a program called Yellow Ribbon, mm-hmm. where for them to enter that particular session to get them reorganizing them to the way of life. Having support system and telling them they have support system, but really providing them a way of knowing that there's people around and that they're not alone. And that's very, very important. Yeah. When a soldier comes back, I always feel that when a soldier comes back, they're never the same. Mm-hmm. And so they need to know that other people are not are like them, mm-hmm. but they have the resources available.
Yeah. So you're making a career out of being in the Army. Mm-hmm. How has it changed during your time?
It's changed tremendously. Well, for women, I feel that it's changed because we're more of us. They mm-hmm. can't get rid of us. So there's more of us out there, mm-hmm. More of us as cohesive, as one, as strong. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. If you ask me that question, more mm-hmm. women being in the military, more women taking a position that men used to have, mm-hmm. and we're doing a good job with it. I think that's why some men wanted to be the all boys club still, because mm-hmm. Because we're coming and we're coming strong and there's a lot of us.
Yeah. Going back to when you were commissioned, right? Mm-hmm. What was your training like after you made that decision?
My training was very easy. I was very lucky. Mm-hmm. My training was I had friends. That their training was like crazy, but my training initially was a training for an officer. You went to school to learn how to become a leader. How mm-hmm. Because it's very difficult to become a leader.
Yeah.
Meaning, one can't go to school and say, okay, this is what to do. It's the character of the individual. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, very hard. But I want to share with you one of the things that the military instilled in all of us. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the military instilled in all of us, and I wanted to share that with people if they Absolutely. Don't know. Mm-hmm. The military has values, and I've used these values with my civilian as well as military. And the values are the basic that you use all every day of your life, and mm-hmm. you're not even aware. But loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. And I really feel that if you have those instilled in you, you could go very, very far in life. Mm-hmm. And if you respect people for who they are, whatever, it goes a long way. And the military instilled that in all its soldiers, so that you'll know how to survive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So. That's one of the things that I wanted to share with you. There's another one, but that was one of that I've throughout my speech, mm-hmm. I usually use that as one of the things that I feel that people should honor soldiers. I always say I'm a nurse manager at Roosevelt Hospital, mm-hmm. and I always say that if I have to hire somebody and they tell me in the military they have the job. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to look at the resume, because when somebody's in the military, they're hard workers. Mm-hmm. They follow orders. They follow the rules. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's very, very important.
Yeah. What else did you want to share?
Okay. I wanted to share something that a friend of mine's son, and I don't know if I somehow influenced them without knowing, but... when he turned 18, he's like, I want to go to the military. And I'm like, to the mother, I never spoke to him. Never spoke to him about this. So he was like, this is it for me. Mm-hmm. So he graduated, and he wanted me to come to his graduation. And he was like, the military was so important. So he was so happy. And one of the things that in his graduation, that really instilled in me what a soldier is all about. And I'll read it to you.
Okay.
It is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us the freedom to demonstrate. It is the soldier, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the soldier who salutes the flag, who served beneath the flag, and whose coffin is draped by the flag, who allowed the protester to burn the flag. There is no more noble profession than that of a soldier. We are now and will forever be soldiers. Nobody will be able to take that title away from us. And that is one of the things that when I heard this individual saying that to young soldiers of how important being a soldier, this is a definition to us as soldiers, is it all about being a soldier in the military, in the army. This is what it's all about for us.
Yeah. So you do a lot of outreach.
Mm-hmm.
What can you recommend, or what are some ideas you have of how to kind of bridge the gap between soldiers and civilians?
For people to be more aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bet you you're not even aware that there's a organization. It's called Patriotic that serve soldiers that's are deployed that do not have family members. If I ask you now, do you know there's an organization that really provides you? You could register and provides you a name of a soldier that does not have a family at all,
mm-hmm.
and that you would be their family, and you would, at the holiday season, would send them a care package.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be so surprised that a lot of soldiers that are out there, deployed, do not get a care package mm-hmm. in December.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be so surprised that, you know, some family, you know, all their friends are getting packages, and there's one or two that doesn't have anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved in that, and one day I did it where I email and send a package to the soldier, and on Christmas Day I received an email, thank you for making my day. I received a package for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and that was, he received a package Christmas, you know, Christmas Eve, and that made me feel very, 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 very good. To know that I made somebody, or the group made mm-hmm. somebody happy.
Yeah.
You know, I always usually have a group involved. I have a group where I have a book club.
Mm-hmm.
I usually use my book club, my military, Black Military Women, the New York chapter, Military Women, you know, things like that, to be involved, to get mm-hmm. people more involved of to help the soldier.
And if you had advice for young people joining the military, what would you advise them?
To find somebody, not to do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be done alone. To find a person that to connect with,
mm-hmm.
and keep that person near, and have that person there to support you and to guide you. But not to do it alone, and to find your resources would be to find your own friends, you mm-hmm. might say, to be there for you. Because when you do, the years will go by so fast. The cohesiveness, the collaborative between people will go so fast. 20 years will go fast, and you'll say, "Oh my God, 20 years!" So, yeah, to find your support, and support is really your own peers.
Out of the four women who you were very close with, can you think of maybe one memory that really stands out to you, something that you all did?
Oh, there was a lot. I expect that question. But one of the things that that stood out was that we, the five of us, did something that men usually do, and it's called... actually putting up a hospital. And
mm-hmm.
in military, they call it DepMed, DepMeds, if you want to Google it. And DepMed is like cash, mm-hmm. like, you know, putting up a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had a commander that used to do that. It was man-oriented. And then one year, it became us,
mm-hmm.
where there was no men. And it was like each one of us had our own task. The person that did the actual... collaborative graph
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The other, you know, each of us had a particular duty, mm-hmm. you might say. One that was involved in the tentage, you know, one was involved in making sure that the ISO, which is what another part of the dead man, was put in place correctly, and that we worked as this team. Mm-hmm. And like one of the enlisted has indicated, like when he saw one, he would be looking to see where the others were, and then sooner or later we would follow, you know, through. Mm-hmm. We would, like, the one was the leader, and then sooner or later you would see the two or three of us walking and following. So the dead med was one of the most important things in our lives that as women we were mm-hmm. able to accomplish by ourselves with each other's help as one. And we didn't have any men involved with it at all. It was us. Mm-hmm. It was women putting that particular tentage up. Mm-hmm. So that was the memorable part of us doing it together.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you can think of or want to share?
Well, that's a lot to tell the truth, but the part that I just shared with you, believe it or not, we were so tight that we had men in our group. We're still tight with the men, mm-hmm. you know, like we had three or four. We still connected. Mm-hmm. We still connected, and you wouldn't believe we still connected. But the most memorable part of us was always being together. Mm-hmm. When we had annual training, we would be sleeping almost together. We would eat together, you know. Mm-hmm. We did everything together. Mm-hmm. And those are the memories that I remember the most, is that I was never alone. I was like, there was always one or two of them there. Mm-hmm. Now it's like I am alone. Mm-hmm. And it's the hardest to tell the truth. It's really, really hard. At this particular time of my life, this is the hardest one. This mm-hmm. is the hardest time for me, mm-hmm. because I'm alone, you know, and what do you do when you're alone? You know, you know, do you move on and survive, or do you think of the memories of the way you used to be and what these people instill in you, become stronger and say, you know what, I'm going to make it, you mm-hmm. know. I'll always have them in the back of my mind, but now I have to grow up and I have to be on my own. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm. So for the rest of your career, what do you want to accomplish?
To be available to soldiers, mm-hmm. young soldiers that's coming out, to know that they have resources in me. Mm-hmm. The New York chapter of Black Military Women, to have an organization, one of the things that we want to do is to have a home for homeless women, mm-hmm. Vet women. You'd be so surprised of how many women out there who are homeless, mm-hmm. and they're vet. They serve their country, and there's no home for them. Mm-hmm. So we want to be the first organization to actually buy a house and to have it available for women and children, to have that available to them. Mm-hmm. So that is the goal, you know, to provide women out there a home. Mm-hmm. And they serve their country, they should have a home, but some don't. That's
right. Is there anything else you want to share with me?
Well, I shared with you this, my plaque. Mm-hmm. I would have shared the bigger plaque on that. Mm-hmm. Couldn't share that. But this is what I received, like I told you, for my dedication and selfless service at the Family Readiness Group Liaison. And mm-hmm. that's what they call me, Group Liaison. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was from 2005 to 2011. My mm-hmm. commander gave me that, Colonel Deborah Gomes. And this I recently received by an organization of they call them CANA, it's a Caribbean chapter. And mm-hmm. they gave me that because they honored me because I was dedicated to ensuring that we had soldiers, female soldiers that are out there that need to be recognized. Mm-hmm. And I worked with them diligently to make sure that these soldiers did get recognized. So that's one of the awards that was really, really nice. But I've had several other awards, but like I said, to carry all of them has been like, ooh. But those two were really, really important to me. So I wanted to share that with you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.